So we are in Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Bhutale Srimad Bhakta Bhananta Swam Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Mani Pachani Nivasesis Nibadi Pashatate Shatarni. So we are reading from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 22, text 34. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Patra Pushpa Hola Chaya Mula Valkala Darubihi Ganda Niryasa Vasmashti Tokmaihi Kaman Vitanvate Patra Pushpa Pala Chaya Mula Valkala Darubaki Gonda Niryasa Vasmashti Lokmari Kaman Vitanvate Patra Pushpa Palahatyaya Mula Valkala Darubaki Gandhanir Yasa Vasmashti Tokmai Kaman Vitanvate Patra Pushpa Palahatyaya Mula Valkala Darubiki Gandhan Yasa Vashmashti Tokmai Kaman Vitanvate Ready? Patra, by their leaves. Pushpa, flowers. Pola, fruits. Chaya, shade. Mula, roots. Valkala, bark. Darubihi, and wood. Gandha, by their fragrance. Niryasa, sap. Vasma, ashes. Asti, pulp. Tokmahi, and young shoots. Kaman, desirable things. Vitanvate, they award. Oops. Translation, these trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, and fruits, their shade, roots, bark, and wood, and also with their fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and shoots. You can repeat. These trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, and fruits, their shade, roots, bark, and wood, and also with their fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and shoots. So, no commentary by the servants of Srila Prabhupada, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the Acharyas have very short commentaries, so I'll just read them. Nityasa means sap, Ashti means pulp, and Tokmai means the buds. Jiva Goswami says fragrance is derived from the sap, Ashti means seeds. Sanatana Goswami says fragrance is derived from the sap, Ashti means seeds. So, I'm not going to talk about trees, I'm going to go to the next verse. Sorry about that, because it's one of my favorite subject matters, the next verse. 10:22:35. Etavag janma sapalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranayartaradiha vacha shreya acharanam sadha. And the translation is, it is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. It's a very famous verse that Prabhupada would quote from time to time. So, its translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 9th chapter, text 42. There is a bug. You are responsible. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is the perfection of birth up until now to serve others? Wow. Here the point, Jiva Goswami says, here the point is made for beings having various bodies acts beneficial to others by one's life, airs, wealth, intelligence, and words of success in life. Another version has Shreya Eva Charet Sada. Success in life is always performing beneficial for others by life, airs, etc. By life, airs means doing acts without consideration for one's life. Using intelligence means thinking of the best methods. We're going to talk about all these things. Using words means giving instructions. If one cannot give life, then give wealth. If not wealth, then intelligence. If not intelligence, then words. Actually, Prabhupada would often talk about that. He said, you know, if you can't give your life to the Krishna consciousness movement, then give money. Prabhupada would actually talk like that. And if not, you know, then use your intelligence, and then, you know, speak whatever. So Prabhupada, you can see Prabhupada is actually mirroring the previous acharyas in his presentation of this. So we'll go on. So Om Agana Timiranda Shalgananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the other day I actually spoke a little bit about compassion. I'd like to delve more deeply into this subject matter of compassion, and how to achieve compassion, how to apply compassion, and what compassion is. So first of all, we'd like to mention that compassion, you know, we hear oftentimes from devotees that, you know, compassion, material compassion is what? It's like blowing on a boil. It's useless. Well, real compassion, according to our acharyas, is not simply, you know, giving spiritual knowledge and leading people to Krishna consciousness, but being concerned with everyone's needs. And you see this in it's actually balanced. It's not just spiritual, and it's not just material. Material is just like useless anyway. And it's not just spiritual because people, like Prabhupada said, people are hungry. They're not going to be able to think about spiritual things. And Prabhupada was very concerned. For example, Prabhupada had this injunction that if anyone's hungry, after Prabhupada saw all the children in the holy dham fighting with the dogs for the remnants of the Western devotees' plates, and Prabhupada started crying. And Prabhupada said no one within a certain distance, like 10 miles or whatever it was, should go hungry. And so, you know, sometimes devotees, unfortunately, take advantage of this. You know, Prabhupada started Food for Life. Take advantage of that and use it to collect money for their own, you know, food for wife. Sorry for that one. And it's really bad. Because there's quotes from Prabhupada where he says, if you are collecting money for food distribution, it must go to that. Remember that. So Prabhupada was very concerned both materially and spiritually with the devotees. You know, you hear sometimes Prabhupada was on morning walks with the devotees and people would be coughing. I was just listening to one that Rita Nandamarsh was coughing a lot one of the walks. And Prabhupada said, you know, what's wrong? Or Prabhupada would ask the devotees, you feel better today? Or get the devotees some coats or something like that. So Prabhupada was also very concerned with the material welfare. And there's one particular verse. This is from the Bhagavad Gita. It's actually a quote from the purport of the Bhagavad Gita that illustrates, you know, what Prabhupada's mood was of bringing Krishna consciousness to the West, and I'd like to read it. Okay. The yogi should perform acts for the advancement of human society. There are many purificatory processes for advancing a human being in the spiritual life. The marriage ceremony, for example, is considered to be one of these sacrifices. It's called Vivaha Yajna. Should a sannyasi who is in the renounced order of life and who has given up his family relations encourage this marriage ceremony? The Lord here says that any sacrifice which is meant for human welfare should never be given up. So even if it's something, you know, just not completely like transcendental. Vivaha Yajna, the marriage ceremony is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may be peaceful for spiritual advancement. And Prabhupada also talks about this in regard in the eighth canto of Bhagavatam, where he talks about the Gajendra Mokshana story, where Gajendra was fighting in the water, wasn't his natural environment, and the crocodile was fighting in the water, and it was his natural environment. And so Prabhupada said that one, basically indicating that to progress in spiritual life, one has to find one's natural material environment in order to be stable and steady in Krishna consciousness. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and his Chaitanya Shikshamrita also talks about the same subject matter, talking about how people have material and spiritual needs. The material needs have to be met. So it's a very balanced approach, not one side or the other. You know, very, very balanced approach. You know, and of course, we have the story of Bhakti, which I told the other day. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur chastises devotees for not giving charity to the beggars because they were actually prideful. The marriage ceremony is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. For most men, this Vivaha Yajna should be encouraged even by a person in the renounced order of life. So, you know, traditionally, sannyasis were prohibited. Even there's injunctions, it's interesting in the Vedic literatures, that if you see a sannyasi on the way to the marriage, it's considered a bad sign. You know, there's actually this injunction. But these are, you know, material injunctions. So you have to be able to distinguish between what is a material injunction, time, place, and circumstance, and what, you know, a detail and a principle. Again, we're going to get to that point a little later. Like Prabhupada crossed an ocean. You know, Prabhupada ignored a lot of the details. Prabhupada lived with people who had cat food or dog food in their refrigerator. Anyway, there's so many stories. Sannyasi should never associate with women, but that doesn't mean that one is in a lower stage of life. A young man should not accept a wife in the marriage ceremony. All prescribed sacrifices are meant for achieving the Supreme Lord. So these prescribed sacrifices, generally are material sacrifices, but they're meant for regulating, you know, in fulfilling someone's basic needs. Therefore, the lower stages, they should not be given up. Similarly, charity is for the purification of the heart. If charity is given to a suitable person, as described previously, it leads one to advance in spiritual life. So this is the first point, that of compassion. Compassion is for both material things and spiritual things, with the ultimate goal of helping people progress. Obviously, the ultimate vision is to help people progress. But we should be compassionate both materially and spiritually. And if we, I mean, just like the devotees when they saw someone in a burning building and they had their Rath Yatra cart and the canopy for the Rath Yatra cart, they spread the canopy out, right? There's in Australia, and they caught the person, and Prabhupada thought it was good, even though the person probably was a meat eater and all that other nice stuff. You know, there was a lady She was on a ledge, and they said, jump, jump. Can you imagine that? Devotees holding up the canopy. Jump, jump, jump. Oh, my God. I don't know if I can trust these devotees to hold on to it. Anyways, but other devotees held on, other people held on to the canopy. And, of course, the opposite. Another point I want to make is the opposite of compassion is violence. And Prabhupada defines violence in a very interesting way that I never heard anyone else define violence. Violence, Prabhupada defined as impeding the living entity's spiritual progress, which is really interesting. So in other words, if we're too heavy with Krishna consciousness, it's violent, because you're driving them away from Krishna consciousness. So, you know, if you're abusive like that, or if you don't know how to present, and we'll talk about that in a second, Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance, that's actually violence. Not only killing animals and, you know, hurting other people. Violence means to impede a living entity's spiritual progress. So then the next thing is, all right, so we want to be compassionate, or at least I'd like to be compassionate. So what are the requirements to be compassionate? It's not just a very simple requirement. Of course, the first thing is, the requirement is you got to be spiritual yourself. You know, because we know this verse, what is Krishna Shakti Vinanai Hei Tari Pravartana Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nama Sankirtan. What does that mean? That means that in this age of Kali, the authorized method of self-realization is Krishna Nama Sankirtan. But Krishna Shakti Vinanai Hei Tari Pravartana. If one doesn't have Krishna Shakti, one is not going to be able to present or help people in any substantial way. So the first thing is you have to have good spiritual standards. You have to be potent, you know, or at least awake spiritually. Just like if you're a doctor, you know, sometimes it's really interesting. The doctors, their residents, they have to do these like 70-hour shifts in the hospital, and they're not awake, and they take out the wrong kidney. It happens. That's why nowadays they actually take a crayon or magic marker and say, this is the kidney. I remember I had a hernia operation, and they marked it like three times. And also I had cataract surgery, and they marked it three or four times on top of the eye to make sure they didn't do the wrong eye. So anyway, so one has to be really spiritually potent to be able to help people to be compassionate. Otherwise, it's just going to be sentimental, and you're going to be violent towards them. The second one is that one has to have spiritual knowledge, not just be like Krishna conscious, but at least well-versed in the Shastras, to know how to present Krishna consciousness. I mean, if you don't have this knowledge, it's like someone trying to operate, a doctor who hasn't gone to medical school. Prabhupada also used that example. Doctor hasn't gone to medical school, or like the example that Prabhupada gave of the little boy who tried to help his brother. He felt very compassionate to his brother. And he gave his brother, who had some sort of like liver disease, jaundice, he gave his brother pakoras. And his brother got extremely sick, and therefore the little boy who did that, he got chastised by his parents, spanked by his parents for being compassionate because he didn't have the proper knowledge. So that's really important. Another quality for being compassionate is to be compassionate, to have the mood of compassion, you know, the paradukha dukhi, like that, to be concerned with other people, to be selfless. And the way one gets that is by association with people who are compassionate, because if you're not selfless, you're going to be having so many ulterior motives for presenting Krishna consciousness or for helping people. You know, you want to be appreciated. You want to get money. I mean, I was listening to a class this morning, like Prabhupada was talking about why the scientists doing what they're doing. One devotee said, well, they want to make money. Prabhupada said, yes, but also because they want to get their Nobel Prize and they want to be appreciated like that. So one actually has to have that mood, like Brahman Vasudev, the leper. You know, he had leprosy. There's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, of course, we cannot imitate. I'm not going to do that if I ever had that disease. And he was feeling compassionate even for what? The worms that were inside his leprous sores. Can you imagine that? Like bugs. Or even, I mean, even this morning there was a spider in my house. I didn't put him outside because it was a little too cold for him. You know, sometimes I see the devotees pick up the stink bugs. For the stink bugs? We have stink bugs here. And they put them outside. And I'm just thinking, oh, the poor stink bugs. So anyway, so one actually has to have that mood. I mean, even if you can't keep the stink bug inside. Or even if you have, you know, have to do something about the cockroaches, it should be at least that mood. Oh my God, please, Krishna, please forgive me that. Here I got, you know, like the, here I got that little booger, you know, bugger or whatever you call them. I killed him, Jai, swat. It has to be that mood of compassion that, you know, Krishna, forgive me for this. I mean, you can't avoid violence. Like the Jains, they try to avoid the sort of violence, some sort of hurting other living entities by wearing these masks. Of course, now I'm a Jain because I'm wearing a mask. Anyway, so they try to avoid that, but you can't. Every time you start your car, you walk on the ground, you know, you're killing so many living entities. But at least the mood of compassion should be there. Now, the next one is, I thought, was really example, really important, of course, is you have to understand the market, Desha Kala Patra. Who market means, you know, who your clients are, or who your audience is, who you're trying to reach. And there's an example, this is really interesting, this really struck me when I thought about it, that an example of a Shastras, in the Shastras, of a pure devotee who didn't know his market, and he was going to create, he was creating havoc because he didn't know his market. And okay, everybody can answer except for Mother Urmila. So who is the pure devotee who didn't know his market and it was going to create havoc because he didn't know his market, even though he's a pure devotee, he was presenting everything purely, and he didn't know his market properly? I'll give you another hint. His spiritual, well, this hint will give it away. What? No. No, he knew his market, you know, Upadesho Himorkanam Prakopaya Nashantaye. But he, you know, he tried his best. But there's a devotee who was going to create havoc, and his spiritual master chastised him for misleading people. What? It's Vyasadeva. It's described in the Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva, out of compassion, compiled what? What? Not Mother Urmila. Out of compassion, he compiled what? The Mahabharata. What? Oh, sorry. I have to exclude just all the Prabhupada people. So out of compassion, the Bhagavatam describes out of compassion for the Stri Shuja Dvijabandhu Nam. You know, that's all of us. Isn't it? As far as I know. Friends of the twice born, Shudras, you know, I mean, if we were born in a Shudra family, that would actually be a great thing, because Shudra is meant to serve, respects the Vedic system, etc. So, out of compassion, he compiled the Mahabharata. And you, wow, Mahabharata. But then he was severely chastised by Narada Muni for doing that. And, you know, you're misleading people in the name of religion. Because, you know, you read the Mahabharata, which is compiled because of the compassion of Vyasadeva, and it's hard to figure out, you know, what you should do about things. You know, read the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the Bhagavad Gita is there. It's easy to figure that out when you read the Bhagavad Gita. The rest of the Mahabharata, you know, you got all these things. You know, what is Dharma? There's a lady being stripped in the, or attempted to be stripped in it because people kept their promise. Should you keep your promise, isn't it? Of course, in the end of the Mahabharata, it's very clear because Grandfather Bhishma realizes that he made a mistake and he accepts the principle of ethics called consequentialism, that you should actually accept something as ethical or not ethical, depending upon the consequences of the particular action, not upon, you know, that some rule of dharma. And this is interesting, too, because in modern day ISKCON, you know, people pick out some rule from some obscure shastra or from some other sampradaya. You like this one. From some other sampradaya. But they don't consider the repercussions of accepting that rule. I mean, should I get political anyway? No. Yes. So for example, about the whole discussion about, you know, female Diksha gurus. Vaishnavi Diksha gurus. You know, I can't refer to the body here, Vaishnavi Diksha gurus. Of course, that's also a reference to the body. But anyway, Vaishnavi Diksha gurus. You know, what is the principle? What is the detail? And what sort of repercussion is there for not accepting it? And what sort of repercussion is there for accepting it? You know, you got to really balance these things. I mean, because you can pick injunctions from Manusmita, or of course, there's no bona fide version of the Manusmita nowadays. People hate to tell you that because it hasn't really been passed down in disciplic succession. Or you can pick injunctions from the Hari Bhakti Vilas about carrots. You know, we got people from the Gaudiya Math, some Gaudiya Maths, who say that ISKCON devotees are fallen because they eat carrots. Oh, my God. Poor Bugs Bunny. Anyway, you don't know who that is. It's just like, and you know, those injunctions, Prabhupada said, many of the injunctions in the Hari Bhakti Vilas are meant for, or influenced by smarta considerations. Because they were preached, not that they're bad, but they're preaching the smartas. There's many injunctions. Now, what does Krishna say to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita? Trigunya Vishayaveda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana Nirjwambo Nityasatvasto Niryogakshema Atmavan. So there has to be an understanding of priorities. And so this is really the point, to understand who you're approaching, what are the repercussions for doing this, what are the repercussions for doing that. It requires realization, which Srila Prabhupada had. So compassion requires realization. Therefore, after Srila Vyasadeva understood that, then he compiled the Bhagavatam. And here's what the Bhagavatam is. I'm going to read another quote here. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. There's that word welfare which is used in this verse. Such truth upholds the three, uproots, sorry, doesn't uphold, uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within the heart. So really, that's the point. These are the different requirements for compassion. And then you adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance. And Prabhupada mentioned this, desha, kala, patra. And so, this is what compassion, and I just wanted to finally read, and welfare, compassion. Finally read a quote from Srila Prabhupada, from one of my, actually it is my favorite poem, is from the Vrindavan Bhajan about compassion. In the Kali Yuga, the jivas are all fallen and the lowest of mankind. Seeing they do not see the different activities, the Supreme Lord Gaurasundara is the most magnanimous and his instructions are full of nectar. One who has taken his birth in the land of Bharata should engage in welfare activities according to his instructions. The Supreme Lord's leela was to relish mellows in the Nirjana, but it is not the play of Vaishnavas to imitate these activities. And I'm skipping some. The six Goswamis came and preached religious life. They save the process of devotional service in the order of Lord Chaitanya. They are eternally perfect associates of the Lord and always remember Radha and Krishna. Remembering them, all the conditioned souls' sins are cleared away. But if he tries to imitate them, taking on their dress and characteristics, he becomes the plaything of Maya and does not cross over the material ocean. Always preach from Jiva's door to door. Your life will be successful as a result of your preaching. Sri Dayataya Das Prabhu gave this instruction. That's Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Chant Hare Krishna loudly. This is my initiation. Kirtan is not just drums and kartels. The sound of kirtan is not this modern system. Anything favorable for devotional service is all Madhava, and the only enjoyer of the three worlds is Yadava. Maya's pride and joy, the radio sound, destroy them all by the forceful kirtan. And probably, if it was today, Prabhupada would say, Maya's pride and joy, the internet. Social networking. Destroy it all. Preach that throughout the whole world. Sitting alone in your room, shouting, you may increase your bile secretion. But in 10 million births, Srihari won't be pleased. Wow. Srihari is no one's father's property. Come out of your cage. Stop making objection. Everything belongs to Srihari, and Srihari belongs to everyone. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra loudly. By the performance of such sankirtan, there will come remembrance automatically. Then there will be nirjana bhajan manifested in the heart spontaneously. And then finally, I'd like to read from the Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada talks about compassion, welfare, etc. like that. So here we go. It's from a purport. Only a person who is fully in Krishna consciousness can be said to be engaged in welfare work for all living entities. Okay, so let me unpack that a little bit, because there was a question last night in class about this, because Prabhupada said fully in Krishna consciousness. So fully in Krishna consciousness means not that we have to be 100% pure devotees, but we follow the orders of the pure devotee. Just like if someone is a good driver of a car, then he drives the car, so let Prabhupada drive us. It's only a person who is fully in Krishna consciousness can be said to be engaged in welfare work for all living entities. When a person is actually in the knowledge that Krishna is the fountainhead of everything, then when he acts in that spirit, he acts for everyone. The sufferings of humanity are due to forgetfulness of Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme friend. Therefore, to act to revive this consciousness within the entire human society is the highest welfare work. As I mentioned before, means balanced, not imbalanced. Being concerned with people's material and spiritual welfare, as Srila Prabhupada was. One cannot be engaged in such first-class welfare work without being liberated in the Supreme. A Krishna-conscious person has no doubt about the supremacy of Krishna. He has no doubt because he's completely freed from all sins. This is the state of divine love. And by engaging oneself in this welfare work, one is assured of perfection in Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada states here. By the performance of such sankirtan, there will become remembrance automatically. Then there will be nirjan bhajan manifested in the heart spontaneously. So, any questions or comments? Yeah. Tolerance. Yeah. Well, I was mentioning that in connection with Lord Kapiladeva's verse in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatikshiva Kuru Nika. Because in order to be really compassionate, you know, it's interesting the word Tatikshiva comes before Kurunika, full of mercy. In order to be fully compassionate, one has to be detached from one's own sufferings and enjoyments. Otherwise, one will be thinking of oneself as one is so-called acting compassionately or trying to act compassionately. So it's really important to be selfless. However, because I'm not selfless, you know, anyway, whatever. Because we may not be selfless if we simply act as instruments for the previous acharya, then things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. You understand? But we have to utilize our intelligence to understand the difference between principles and details, and I know you've heard about this before, in Krishna consciousness, in order to carry out the previous acharya's desires. And that requires what we call market research. You have to know who you're talking to. You know, sometimes people ask me, like, how do you know what to say to someone to bring them to Krishna consciousness, or how to interact with them? And my answer is, you got to first know the person. I mean, obviously, you have to know Krishna consciousness. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, in a general lecture, it's not that you got to know everybody in the room. You just give a general lecture. But you see, actually, Prabhupada would say something really heavy in a general lecture, and then person to person, Prabhupada would act in a way that, you know, almost appeared to be contradictory to what he said. You know, Prabhupada sometimes, like a morning walk, would be so heavy against household life. I mean, really? Oh, my God. I mean, some of our householders heard that, they'd probably jump off the dome, but or Empire State Building, or whatever. But and then personally, Prabhupada is so encouraging. And you really, this contrast is quite interesting. Because on a personal basis, Prabhupada always got to know people. And then he would apply Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. And the culture in America, like Prabhupada, you know, having advertisements, chant Hare Krishna and stay high forever. I mean, in India, that would have not worked. Maybe it'll work now. Yes, Mother Urmila. Yeah. Yes, of course. And sannyasis should also engage in order. These were sannyasis that were chastised by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. These weren't brahmacharis. They weren't householders. Yeah, they were sannyasis. I mean, they weren't brahmacharis either. They were sannyasis. And they got chastised by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur for not engaging in charity. Yes, sure. Well, the mundane charity can be utilized to bring people to Krishna. So in other words, it has to be balanced. That's what I talked about. That was one of the first points in class, that it can't be mundane, wholly and solely mundane, and it can't be, you know, for practical purposes, it can't be wholly and solely spiritual either. It has to be balanced when dealing with people of this world. You know, that's the whole point about welfare activities, has to be balanced. You know, you distribute food, but it should be prasadam. I mean, what's the use? You're distributing sin if it's not prasadam, right? So what's the use?
Shall go. Thank you. Trust the deities today.